pay as you earn, especially if you have loans. I know I've worked with a number of people in this situation where we're on track for loan forgiveness in about 2027 or 2028. At that point, maybe you do stick on pay as you earn for a couple of years. See if you can just ride that out until loan forgiveness and you get through it before the sunset of that plan. Mm-hmm. If it did sunset, you transition into IBR anyway. Your payments will go up just right at the end of that, but may as well take the lower payments that still count towards PSLF if you are on that route.
Welcome to Finance for Physicians, the show where we help physicians like you use money as a tool to live a great life. I'm your host, Daniel Rinn, and I've spent the last decade advising physicians on their personal finances with the mission to help them understand that taking control of their finances now means creating a future where they can practice medicine where, when, and how long they want to.
Jeff, what's going on?
Oh, hey, Daniel. It's good to see you again. I'm having a moment today where I realized my body's saying, hey, welcome to 40. I turned to grab a glass of water in the kitchen today, and then my back hurts.
Oh, no.
What are you going to do?
That kind of thing will sneak up on you, I guess.
Somebody said I need to work on my flexibility. That's probably true.
Do you stretch every morning?
No, but I should, apparently. So
yeah, maybe.
Get some stretching going. But speaking of flexibility, it's time to be flexible with student loans again.
Yeah, isn't it? I guess the government is hoping everybody has lots of flexibility and grace with the student loan changes. We talked about the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. I'm still getting the hang of saying all that and all the changes. We talked about all the tax law changes first, but there's also a ton of big student loan changes, massive student loan changes. So they're mostly negatives, right? Any positives? Maybe a few positives.
Say,
we'll try to put a positive spin at least on something.
It probably depends on your policy viewpoint if it's positive or not. But for borrowers with existing loans, I'd say mostly negative.
Yeah.
Or so, in some cases, it's even keeled, no real change, just some changes that amount to no change, which is par for the course with a government program, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the one little piece of good news before we jump in is that it's a little more concrete than it's been. There's been a very extended period of time where nobody knows what's happening. It's like we're in this COVID forbearance period where everything was up in the air and nothing was happening. So planning was nearly impossible.
Yeah. So
that part is there's a little bit more concrete game plan around, and it was passed through Congress. So that's more firm than an executive order.
Yeah, certainly a lot more clarity at this point, particularly with the court case and things being paused and all the injunctions, all that stuff. Some of that still needs to be sorted out.
Right.
But going forward, here's the template for what to expect. And it's all from this One Big Beautiful Bill Act.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah. So we're going to hit the high points that we think are most valuable to you guys listening. There's a ton of stuff in it, so there's no way we'll hit everything, but we're going to do our best to hit the high points.
Well, actually, before we dive into what's in the bill, It might be good to say what's not in the bill, what wasn't impacted. There have been some major concerns I've been hearing about in my student loan conversations with doctors, and a big one was PSLF still exists. Mm-hmm. Yeah, PSLF still a program. It's still an option, and it exists. It's still an option for those that work those 120 months in a nonprofit institution and have the payments to go along with it. That's not in the bill because it didn't change.
And it still could be really appealing, even if you're, say, like in medical school or entertaining medical school. Still could be appealing.
Yeah, that's another change that was discussed and not implemented was medical residency fellowship. It was put out there that those periods of time would not qualify, and that would be for future borrowers, But that did not make the final cut. And so
that's a big
deal because those are the lowest earning years that you have that are going to be qualifying for a loan forgiveness program. So to not be able to count those would make it very difficult for PSLF to be profitable for you, a good option. Whereas this still keeps that an option. It might still make sense in many cases.
And 25-year forgiveness made the cut, but not 20-year forgiveness, right?
So that part just depends on the plan that you're on. So it's the new, or IBR persists. So IBR is still going to be a plan. We'll talk about those payment plan changes here with what was in the bill, but it did not change the forgiveness aspect of income-based repayment, which has that time-based aspect. For new borrowers versus old borrowers, it's a different time period, but it's 20 or 25 years. That's the good news, is what wasn't in there. PSLF's still around, and residency still counts. That's great for our audience. Good recipe.
Those are definitely good pluses. Okay, well, let's get into the repayment plan changes. You want to kick us off with that?
So that's the big one, that repayment plans are changing again. It's going to be simplified, where they're taking away all current income-based repayment, income-driven repayment plans, and those will all be consolidated into the income-based repayment plan. And that comes in two flavors still, because there's those for old income-based repayment borrowers and new ones. Basically, if you borrowed a loan before 2014, you're old. After 2014, you're new. And during 2014, half of you are old and half of you are new.
Can you explain the difference between those? For, is that even matter for anybody before or after 2014?
Yeah. Before 2014, your payment is based on 15% of your income. After 2014, your payment is based on 10% of your income. Likely a lower payment if you're new. What's important to us is that there's a new repayment plan being created, the repayment assistance plan, and that will be available basically to everyone no earlier than July 2026. But
so now there's IBR and RAP only, right?
There'll be IBR and RAP. Current borrowers can get into IBR. So if you're on Pays You Earn, if you're on Save, if you're on ICR, I mean, there's a niche case where people should be on ICR, I suppose, but we're probably not talking to hardly anybody with that one. But Pays You Earn or Save right now, that should be transitioning, or you would be moving to the income-based repayment plan at some point between July 2026 and July 2028. You can stay on your plan for a little while and eventually would be transitioned to IBR.
Mm-hmm.
For borrowers after July 1st, 2026, it appears that the repayment assistance plan, the RAP plan, will be the only plan that you would be eligible for. That's an important one to notice, is that, or to note, is that going forward, that might be the only plan to calculate on for anybody taking out new loans.
So it's looking like IBR is getting axed too?
New applications. Yeah. No, so it still exists, but it would be.
So there's a window. If you want to get into IBR, there's a window of time.
Yeah. So the window would really be, it would be just stay on your income-driven repayment plan. And if you do, you should transition into IBR at some point in the next couple of years. But if you are borrowing new loans starting a year from now, oh, my back just winced. It wasn't the student loan pain, it was the back pain. But yeah, if you are borrowing a year from now new loans, you need to be aware that that could limit your payment options further to just that repayment assistance program.
So if I'm an existing borrower, I can stay in IBR?
Yes. So if you're an existing borrower, you can stay in IBR. And for many on other plans, particularly the Save forbearance right now, if you're in that situation, should be taking a look at if it makes sense to switch over to the IBR plan or do something else with those loans, just to assess your situation. Right now, there's not a whole lot of benefit to staying in the Save forbearance anyway.
Right. Because they're about to, that's another big factor. Interest starts back on forbearance and everything. Interest was waived during COVID forbearance, which technically was continuing until now. We're recording this on August 4th. But as of now, interest has just restarted a few days ago.
Yeah. Well, for those that were in COVID forbearance and then jumped on the Save plan, basically, yeah, there hasn't been any interest for you for like 5 years, or if you've been enrolled in a plan since 2020. For others, there would have been some interest there if they weren't on that Save forbearance. But yeah, as of August 1st, interest is starting up again on the Save plan in that forbearance.
Are Save payments counting towards PSLF?
Right now, that forbearance that they are in does not count. There's the potential you could use the PSLF buyback program to get them to count in the future. But that's a hot mess in and of itself.
It's all a hot mess, Jeff.
But anyway, since those payments aren't counting right now and they'd have to go back and recalculate income anyway, mm-hmm. you may as well, if you want those payments to count for anything, just get on a payment plan that's going to count now and make the payments so you don't have to go and pay them back later. Mm-hmm. And depend on the Department of Education or its successor for student loans to manage a buyback calculation.
If I'm in save, how long can I? So if I'm in save and I've been in save forbearance forever, I guess that would be the scenario where I was not going for PSLF or maybe just totally unsure because I could do the buyback. Like maybe I would go for PSLF. Why would somebody, if I am in save forbearance today, why would I, assuming I was making a good decision, be in save forbearance at this point in time?
I would say it. This point in time, a case where that would make sense is if the cash flow is just the big issue and you could really use $1,500 a month to pay off credit cards before getting ready to tackle your student loans again in a couple months.
Later. But for everybody else, you probably should be seriously thinking about getting out of save, right? Like if you're going for PSLF, probably makes a lot of sense to get out of save pretty quickly versus if you're not going for PSLF, probably makes sense to get out of save pretty quickly too, unless you have one of those exceptions we're talking about or even some others we hadn't thought of. But I think the path is the big question. Like if I'm in save, what's my next path? And it seems like to me, or from my experience, most people are in save, right? Or were in save up till the last few months, but a lot of people were in the save plan.
Yeah, a large number in the save plan. It made a lot of sense. It was a really beneficial plan to borrowers.
Yeah, anyway, so if I'm in, so if, let's go with the scenario where I'm in save and I'm probably not going for PSLF.
Yeah, so you're not going for PSLF. If you're thinking you're going to be paying these loans off.
Right, I am very confident I'm going to have to pay the entire balance off. I just started seeing interest rack up.
Yeah. So if you are ready to make that jump and say, hey, I'm going to pay these off, refinancing is one option. Interest rates on that right now are probably in the 5% range. And a lot of these loans are at 6.8%. And if you can get that 2% difference, it's a big savings. If you aren't ready to abandon the federal loan system, there are a few reasons you might do that. And there are some protections still being in the federal system where you know, you do have access to income-based payments. And if your situation changes, you could possibly get loan forgiveness with the IBR plan. You could still get into a different payment plan like income-based repayment. And you're making payments and the interest isn't just accumulating. You're paying it down and making progress towards some sort of loan reduction or forgiveness in the future.
Let's take a quick break to talk about our firm, Renda Financial Planning. The goal of our podcast is to empower you to make better financial decisions. But sometimes the best financial decision you can make is to work with someone who understands your financial goals and has the expertise to keep you on track to reach them. That's where Renda Financial Planning comes in. We are a full-service financial planning firm that works with over 400 physicians and their families across the country. We charge a transparent monthly flat fee for our services and offer virtual meetings you can take from anywhere. Best of all, you'll get to work with a team that specializes in working with physician families. So whether you're starting out and wondering how you'll balance your student loan payments and saving for a home, or you are an established physician trying to figure out how to pay for your kid's college and how much you need to save to reach financial freedom, we can help. I'll put a link in the show notes to schedule a no obligation meeting with one of our certified financial planners. Ren Financial Planning, LLC is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit renfinancial.com. That's W-R-E-N-N-E financial.com.
Okay, so most of the time, it seems like in general, the refinance route is looking a lot more appealing for the category of people that are now getting the big interest accruals happening. If on the other hand, I was on save and I was intending to go for PSLF, that's a completely different situation.
Yeah, and that's where that comes into play now. You probably want to explore at least moving on to a different payment plan. And the reason being that, number one, those payments, you would like to have them counted now and in the books rather than trying to buy back payments later.
Forbearance.
Or recalculate and buy them back later. Even if you are doing that, the saved forbearance has lasted so long now that if you were buying back less than a year worth of payments, the calculation should be easy. It still takes the processing group a long time to do this, but it should just be the lower of repayment before or after you entered forbearance. But if you're getting beyond a year of forbearance, then it's going to take tax documents and they're going to calculate the payment on your current income anyway.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do that, why not stay, keep you in control of the process, get the income submitted sooner so that the payments are going on and they're counting and you don't have to depend on a program.
That was an executive order.
And that is, there hasn't been discussion of that program ending. There's not a reason it persists either.
I would say that if people start utilizing it, it'll start catching more attention. I bet it's flying under the radar right now, honestly. I don't know. The buyback program hasn't come up much that I'm aware of. If it's me, there's no chance I'm counting on the buyback program. That's my opinion. There was zero chance I would count on the buyback program even existing. I would much more likely want to go ahead and see the payments calculated and get it out of my account.
Yes, and there have been. So the American Federation of Teachers, I believe, had a lawsuit against the Department of Education. They've been reporting on numbers for applications for PSLF being processed, as well as the buyback program. The positive part of the buyback program is that some of those requests are being processed, somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 a month.
2,000 and 3,000 payments?
Of those buyback requests. I mean, yes.
Like borrowers, 1,000 borrowers get
about 3,000 borrowers are getting those repayment plans.
Tiny,
those
right?
Relative. Processed. There's a growing backlog, though, where there's about 65,000 requests in the queue. Hopefully that pace picks up. But let's say, I wouldn't say the buyback program is gone or here. I wouldn't want to depend on it if I don't have to.
So what do you do?
Just get into repayment now so that those payments are counted.
You move out of save?
Yeah. So if you move out of save, do an application on studentaid.gov. You can't
recertify income within save.
No, because there's no payment calculation for it right now.
You would recertify your income, or can you get into IBR?
So if you are looking at doing it between now and July of 2026, you're going to have the options depending on the date of the pay-as-you-earn plan or income-based repayment plans.
Pay as you earn?
Yes, I know. We just said it's going away, but it's still an option to enter into for a while. Oh. Yeah, so for right now, pay is still available to enroll in and is likely. So the sunset date on that is July of 2028.
Yeah.
But I guess need to be around until then.
If you worked with us, we're pretty, a little bit, you know, more proactive, strategic with these sorts of things. And so typically, the people we were working with that would have benefited from payee were already in payee. And so, therefore, that would have not been a situation that would come up. And the people that were in repayee were in repayee for a reason. And they were all the people that switched over to save. Repayee basically became the save plan. But the game has changed totally now. So, payee might be a little bit more appealing when you know save doesn't exist at all.
Okay, so we said it's sunsetting, but for the older borrowers that don't get the new IBR plan, so they'd have to pay 15% on IBR instead of 10. Pay as you earn, especially if you have loans. I know I've worked with a number of people in this situation where we're on track for loan forgiveness in about 2027 or 2028. At that point, maybe you do stick on pay as you earn for a couple of years. See if you can just ride that out until loan forgiveness and you get through it before the sunset of that plan. Mm-hmm. If it did sunset, you transition into IBR anyway. Your payments will go up just right at the end of that, but may as well take the lower payments that still count towards PSLF if you are on that route.
So pay sunsets into IBR.
Yeah. So between July of 2026 and 2028, that's when that transition would make.
And then after then, you can't actually get into IBR.
Right. So at that point, all the other plans, either you've transitioned into IBR or you're on the repayment assistance plan.
That's after then is when it's wrapped.
Yes. And then for anybody,
it's going to be a mess until then.
Wrap.
That's when it was getting simpler. And then we started talking and it's not simplest. So it's getting simpler, but this whole transition period is going to be kind of a mess until I guess it will be simpler when we hit 2028 when there's only wrap.
Yes. Wrap and IBR, the two payment plans left, eventually just wrap until another Congress does a reconciliation bill and creates their own new plan.
Is that your prediction?
You heard it here first. Play that in 4 years. Well, I don't know about 4 years. It depends on
the results. I'd say it's less likely for Congress to do it than executive orders.
Right. The template for how to introduce a new payment plan is now in front of us. Do a reconciliation bill and you can adjust a lot of things. So who knows what happens in the future. But for now, that is the plan. That's some clarity there. Just a real quick pro-con comparison, IBR versus that wrap plan. For new borrowers, they both take 10% of your income, but IBR has this discretionary income chunk that it takes away before counting that 10%. The repayment assistance plan really doesn't.
It just gives you like more like less than 10% of your total income.
Yes. And so in general, it's going to be favorable to stick on the IBR plan versus the repayment assistance plan in general.
But that's after 2028, it doesn't matter because there's just wrap.
Yeah, a few things about the wrap plan. You can still divide up your income by filing separate on the wrap plan. That's still an option and a decision point when you're strategizing about your student loans. For those of you that are married, if you're filing a joint return, your repayment plan takes into consideration every source of income in the household. If you file separate, it's limited to just your income. If you live in a community property state, it gets really crazy and you got some options there too. Separate is just one person's income versus joint makes you use both.
Mm-hmm.
10% of two incomes is usually bigger than 10% of one. But anyway, so that's the big thing. Oh, repayment assistance plan does have loan forgiveness. It just takes 30 years. But if you've been making payments on that for 30 years, the balance would be forgiven.
That's the non-PSLF forgiveness. That's just the make payments. And they're like, we're tired of taking your payments. So we're just going to forgive it. Yeah.
Have we exhausted these payment plans?
Maybe we could wrap up with a few strategies that are more common. If I'm talking to the general audience, if you're 0 to 5 years away from forgiveness and you're in the thick of all this and you have like payee or save or whatever, that's really difficult to say, like rule of thumb wise. It's just gotten pretty complicated. So I would say talk to your planner for more custom specific advice on that. Or if you work with somebody, talk to them. Or this is a good time to hire a student loan planner. Like there's people that do that kind of standalone service. Jeff sometimes does it himself. If there was ever a time where it would be good to get some advice on your student loans, it's right now because it's such a mess for the in-betweener period and the stakes are pretty high, especially, you know, you have pretty high balances. That's a big impactful decision. I would not throw in the towel on PSLF. If you're, there's a lot of people I've heard talking about save, especially they're like super frustrated that like, say you're at a academic hospital and you're like, you know, 4 years out from PSLF and you've been in save for a really long time. And you've just found out that it's going away and that your forbearance payments don't count. Those people you would expect are probably very frustrated. And some of them I would bet are even thinking I'm giving up on PSLF. I'm going to refinance. I'm going to go private student loan, just pay it off as fast as I can. I would not do that. I would take a minute and look at the numbers or hire somebody to help you look at the numbers. Maybe that is the ultimate conclusion. Probably not, but at least you can do it a little more logically. With all that being said, you want to throw out some scenarios that would be good for people to think about, especially earlier.
If you're considering medical school or borrowing for medical school, if it's after normal financial aid decisions for the 2026-2027 school year. Make your plans based on that wrap plan, at least for now. Anybody borrowing under that condition, that's what we expect, that you'll be on the repayment assistance program and it'll be 10% of your income. Factor that into your resident budget. For those that are already in residency, maybe early residency, or you know, have several years left in that training, in those training years, usually keep those options open. It still makes sense in most cases to be on an income-driven repayment plan, whether that's income-based repayment, which is likely where you want to be at this point going for a while, but keeping the options open where you're making progress towards PSLF if, as an attending, you go to a qualifying position, it's still a good deal to have loans forgiven later and pay less on them. Especially for 4, 5, 6 years. You know, if you have 4 years of residency at this point, you're almost halfway there on the payments anyway. If you're on a plan like income-based repayment where they get capped, you can't pay any more than you would over 10 years. It's like you got a 10-year playoff plan, but you got a discount on the first 4 years. If PSLF was going to make sense to you before this, it probably still does. One other case, a perk or a benefit of all these changes, you mentioned there's no payment cap on that wrap plan. There's also no payment cap on the save plan, which is where a lot of people are. And they were expecting, if I want my payments to count, I can't get on any other plan because my payments, my income's too high and I won't even qualify to get on income-based repayment or pay-as-you-earn. One perk of requiring everybody on a repayment plan to move to IBR is that they had to remove the partial financial hardship requirement where basically your income has to be low enough relative to your loan balance to get on a payment plan. They've removed that, but the payment cap so that you wouldn't pay more than you would in 10 years on the plan is still in place. This could be an opportunity for higher income people that are farther along to get into that payment plan and have a capped payment where it wouldn't be maybe even as high as you're paying now. If you're on, well, if you're on the save plan, you're not paying now, but yeah, what it would be scheduled.
This could be a really good perk because the fact that they let you into IBR is a big deal because of that payment cap.
Yeah. And if you're looking at the cap, it almost doesn't matter if you're old or new. You're probably old if you're in there at this point. But if you're worried about it, who knows? That's a guess.
Other big common scenarios or general scenarios for people?
No, I think you might have said it best was just don't panic. Do an assessment, figure out what the right path is forward for you. If it was already going to be PSLF, it probably still is. If you were going to pay off your loans, this might be that point in time where now the incentive not to refinance is limited. It's going away with the zero interest going away. So maybe that spurs you onto action. But if your plan was already to pay them off, it might be time to take that next step in that plan and refinance them. And if you're not sure, if you're a resident, you know, that has a few years before you get that attending position and you're not quite sure where it'll be, flexibility is likely to be the right route. Stay on an income-driven repayment plan, keep your options open, and make that decision when the future's clear.
Anything else you can think of we didn't hit on?
Other changes that we didn't hit on, these won't necessarily apply to the current borrowers, but borrowing limits are going down. So,
oh, yeah.
Or being capped. So new professional students or new med students would be limited to $200,000 of loans, which would be a change from the unlimited borrowing that's currently out there. Again, doesn't impact our current borrowers that we're talking to, but in the future, that could have an impact.
Yeah, I think so. That will probably just increase. Jeff and I were talking about this before, but that'll probably just increase the volume of private loans happening. I would agree with Jeff's prediction about that. You're going to not be able to borrow as much through the federal government, but there's tons of private companies in America that are chomping at the bit to offer more loans to medical students.
I'll give one other impact. This is dealing with Parent Plus loans. It's a very small group of people that this might apply to right now, but for those that have Parent Plus loans, it's going to be a little bit easier to get on to the income-based repayment, but they do have to be consolidated by July of 2026. Otherwise, they'll be out of luck.
Okay, well, I want everyone to email their questions, especially if you want us to dig into areas. We resisted the temptation to get into the weeds. We could talk about scenarios or dig into specifics as needed. Make sure to let us know what you guys are thinking, and hopefully we hit the main high points for today.
The high points and then a few others.
Thank you, Jeff, as always.
I love talking student loans with you, and we'll have to do it again soon.
Sounds good.
No guests or clients appearing on the podcast received any form of compensation for their appearance and obtained no other benefit from us. It should not be assumed that every client has had the same experience.